I mean, isn't that the whole point of weapons, is to be unfair?
No, you can be sports.
Longbows were like, longbows are totally OP, man.
Yeah, that was bullshit. That's why, like, everybody agrees that the English were dicks. I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And it's time for another episode of Video Games Hot Talk, episode number 94, if I am not mistaken. Were you guys inventing a cool peeing game?
Well, no, we were talking about how the light bulb has burned out in this rental apartment.
I don't think it burned out. I think I broke it by hitting it.
Okay. Do you think you broke the fixture or the light bulb?
Well, I don't know. The light bulb itself does not look broken. I don't really understand how this fixture works. I was trying to figure out how to get to the light bulb, and yeah. I couldn't figure out how to get to the light bulb.
Is it break glass in case of darkness?
I think maybe it is. Yeah, okay. It's in case bulb is burned out, break bulb with hammer.
Riff was suggesting. What were you suggesting, Riff?
I suggested just drinking the contents of a bunch of glow sticks, and then when you go to pee, you wouldn't need a light.
Right, and while I appreciated that idea, I was concerned that it would not... It would have the problem of you still wouldn't know that you were facing the toilet correctly until it was too late.
Well, but I mean, it's not like it's never too late to spray glow stick piss all over your bathroom.
Sure.
You're decorating it, right?
Sure. I guess if your dick were glowing, then it would be fine. But I don't know if that's a thing that would. I guess depending on how.
So here's Bright. What you do. While you glow are drinking stuffings. One while you're drinking a case of glow sticks, you hold one glow stick aside to cut open and fuck. And then and then your dick just glows all the time.
Wow, that was not where I thought you were gonna go with that. Yeah, well.
And you know, while you're at it, you might as well eat a bunch of asparagus. Kevin.
Yeah, we have flipped the paradigm, and yeah. it's now yeah. you and me in the same room and Riff remote.
And I'll hear Riff, all, how does it feel all to by be myself. Lonely? Well, I mean, as long as there's this giant poster of the dude on the wall staring at me, I'll never truly be lonely.
It's okay.
That was literally the best part of having that intern. Was he left kind of a cool poster behind? Riff, what have you been up to?
Not much. I mean, pretty much.
Riff, every Wednesday, it's like you suddenly wake up and realize, oh right, we do a podcast. It never occurred to me until Zach asked me,
anecdotes.
What have you been up to? that anyone was ever gonna ask me any question ever.
I'm never up to anything except video games though, and this is before the
true.
Bit where
you
we
like,
talk about video games.
Sometimes you
anime.
You stitchcraft some yeah. stuff. You do a real stitch. You go to a stitch and bitch.
Oh man, I want to open that store now. I haven't even been doing.
I think it's a
happening.
Yeah, I think like ladies will go, and it's like ironic, like maybe rockabilly girls will go, and
okay.
they will sew and complain.
Huh,
I have
okay.
no idea, man. I don't understand women.
One of Melissa's family friends made a quilt for her that's really kind of awesome. It's like a really cool quilt, and I was like, how do people just do this? Like, how do people just like sit down and make something and then give it away to people that they are vaguely connected to.
Yeah, I mean,
the
I am
giving
guessing
it away
that most of
the
people who do stuff
me.
Like that would look at us and think, how the fuck do you make a video game and just give it away? Give it away to thousands of,
okay,
of kids to
sure.
make them happy, right?
It's just like...
It's an actual object.
Tangible, yeah. Like, it's
yeah.
it's weird.
Like, if we give it away, we haven't lost it. It's like the light of knowledge in our candles.
It's like all of those ebook authors that you're talking about that are effectively just giving their stuff away.
Yeah.
Because eventually, in, you know, 80 years, it'll be public domain.
Sure. As long as Disney doesn't buy it from them.
Mm, true.
Damn you, Disney. I went to a casino where they apparently in the state of California, you're not allowed to have any cubicle gaming devices.
What?
So there was a craps
cubicle?
Table. And we went up to the craps table. And we put some money down. And we were like, yeah, we're going to play some craps. And then we looked over and realized there weren't any dice. What? And instead of one of the people at the craps table throwing dice, what happens is that a little fat guy with a mustache who's sitting down at the craps table just starts dealing himself pairs of cards from decks of cards that have the numbers 1 through 6.
Whoa. On them,
and pretends that that is the die roll. And
what?
David turned to me and was like, when do we start playing? And I said, I think we're playing, buddy. I think this guy fucking with these cards over here is us playing.
Whoa.
And then we lost our money, and then we were like, you know what? Fuck this.
Yeah.
We took our chips and we walked away.
Rolling the dice is entirely the fun bit of craps.
Yep. That is the only reason that you would want to be there. Like, with this cards version, like, it's nobody's turn ever. Right, and there's no like run of good, like it's wow, it is so pointless.
You might as well just
there's a roulette table.
Give your money
there's
to
no
a
numbers
hobo.
On the roulette wheel. It just has cards on it, and I said, couldn't they just make dice with cards
wait,
on
wait,
the faces?
Wait. Did you say a roulette wheel?
Yes,
a roulette doesn't have any cubicle parts.
Yeah, I don't know. There might also you might not also be allowed to use numbers if the numbers aren't on cards.
So only gambling with cards is allowed in California.
Apparently.
Isn't this on some sort of Indian reservation?
It is on an Indian reservation. Like, and I thought the whole point of that was that everything was legal. Like, you can fucking scalp people. You can
and
smoke...
tickets and people.
You can smoke a peace pipe. You can do whatever the fuck you want because we owe you that much. Right? And no, apparently not. You can do whatever you want as long as it doesn't involve cubes. So that was my weekend.
Yeah, I had a full day of trying to get from Chicago to San Francisco yesterday.
Yeah,
that was super awesome. Yeah, like it's always kind of a gamble booking flights, you know, weeks or a month in advance. I guess flying out of Chicago or into Chicago because it's always going to be snowing when you want to go. And we got a foot of snow yesterday. So. I had to fly out, trying to fly out while that was happening.
Looking at the weather map, there was all this weather in Chicago and all this weather in San Francisco, and I was like, huh, glad I'm not on that plane.
Yeah, it was pretty bumpy.
I'm always glad I'm not on any plane.
I don't mind being on a plane, but I hate being in an airport or going into or leaving from an airport.
Hmm.
You know, since the advent of the iPhone... where I just always have an infinite amount of entertainment available, I don't give a fuck where the hell I am, basically. Like, I can do whatever, and I always have something to do, even if I'm sitting in a box for 8 hours, you know?
My worry, except not for 8 hours, right?
Because I've got a battery.
Oh, you got battery, yeah.
I've got like 12 days of charge.
So you're super prepared. I always get there and I'm like, oh fuck, I only got 15% of my battery left on my phone and I'm about to take a 1200 hour flight because I'm going to the moon. I really should have prepared better for that. I didn't even bring any food.
You didn't even bring anything to geocache on the moon.
Oh yeah, or to breathe.
Wow, geocache on the moon.
Yeah. That'd be even harder.
Can we get anything to leave orbit? Could we geocache on the moon by launching a little tiny personal rocket, do you think?
I don't think so. No. I don't think you can get to the moon without
trying
thousands of pounds of fuel. Like,
well, but if your payload is really small,
it's not like a moon balloon.
Well, what about a really good slingshot?
Okay. I'm listening.
How about the world's tallest pogo stick?
Okay.
How about we find an extremely talented discus thrower?
Right. Some sort of really good trebuchet. We could win that pumpkin chucking contest and also we could also distribute geocaches all over the world. Because we don't have to leave orbit.
With the
okay. We could reuse all those old like ICBM missiles, and just launch them at various countries.
We could use those for the Earthling cruiser, along with the point defense laser system, to defeat the Spathy Eluder.
True.
Yeah.
True.
Curses! They used the butt against us, backwards utilizing tracking torpedo. We could find that cat with the fiddle and ask his cow buddy if he would be willing to maybe shed a geocache onto the moon for us while he was jumping over it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I think that might have just been a trick of perspective. Yeah. I mean, I'm no Mother Goose scholar, but...
Do you think there was some foreshortening?
Yeah, probably. It was like they didn't really know how far away anything was.
Blue screen. Right.
No, all those people went out of business.
Oh, when green screens were invented?
Yeah. Yep, they're like the buggy whip manufacturers of the VFX industry. Well, have you guys been playing any video games?
Yeah, I've been playing some video games, playing a couple of video games.
What video games have you been playing, Riff?
Well, I played a little bit of the new 3DS Castlevania, which I guess your estimation of its quality is more or less accurate. It's pretty disappointing. If what you're interested in is a Castlevania game like previous handheld Castlevania games, it's really not that. It's much more like God of War on a 2D plane.
I seem like there were a lot of jumping puzzles and stuff. And
yeah, it's got a lot of jumping, and it's not like tight Castlevania jumping. It's pretty floaty God of War style jumping, and you know, hang from a ledge on a wall and push B to look down and drop onto the next ledge, but don't fuck it up because in this Castlevania there's falling damage, and it's not a lot of fun. I mean, it's pretty, but I don't feel like it's prettier than Order of Ecclesia was, and it's very linear, but it's got like the things, like every now and then there'll be a thing where you can't get to it because you don't have that particular power yet, but they don't really go to anything interesting. It goes to like some bonus XP orbs or something. It's not like you're unlocking a new section of the castle or whatever. It's just a thing that you go and backtrack to get all the extra life power-ups. And it's really just not very interesting.
Well, it would be disappointing if I had any expectations, but...
Yeah.
I played that demo at Comic-Con, and it was just like, yeah, this is not... Like... If you had not said that this was a Castlevania game, I never would have guessed that it was a Castlevania game.
I mean, isn't the look and feel just like totally different too?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's 3D.
It's all 3D, and it's got that sort of gothy, super dark gothy feel of the recent 3D Castlevania game they put out, Lords of Shadow or whatever it was.
Right.
They also did the opening cinematic includes like a thing that I don't know if this is brand new Castlevania lore or if it was like established in the previous Lords of Shadow game or what. And I guess it's kind of a spoiler, but I mean, you find this out in like the first cutscene, so it's not really a spoiler, but skip ahead like 60
Alucard
seconds
is actually
if you don't
Dracula
hear it.
Backwards.
Well, what it is that, okay, so you've got Simon Belmont, and his father was Trevor Belmont, and his father is Gabriel Belmont, but neither Trevor nor Gabriel know about this. Trevor doesn't know who his dad is, and Gabriel doesn't know he has a son. Gabriel Belmont is Dracula.
What?
Yeah. So that means...
No,
yeah, exactly.
Alucard, what's his face?
That's basically... Yeah, I don't know how to feel about this, but I don't think I like it. I mean, that essentially means what? Like, Trevor and Alucard are half-brothers? And, yeah.
Well, how do you know they had different moms? What kind of lady do you think Dracula wants to fuck?
Well, no, it's the identity of Alucard's mother is established in the big game, the one
Symphony
of the Night. Yeah.
Okay. Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember that, but also every bit of text that has ever been in any Castlevania game is so stupid that I barely even read it.
There's like a boss. There's the boss in that is like a twisted memory of Alucard's mother that you have to fight, and she's like being burned at the stake or something.
Hmm.
Okay.
It's been a while since I played it, so I don't totally remember. It's like you have a vision that starts out as like, this is Alucard's mom talking to him, but it turns out it's actually a succubus or something. I don't remember.
Huh. Well, so maybe their mothers are both the same succubus. Is that why Simon gets his... Does this take place... Castlevania took place in, like, the 1700s, right? And then some of the modern Castlevania games on the DS, there were, like, cars out in front of the castle. So... There was one that was like during World War One, but not for any real reason. You know, it's like not. I found a sword and a whip and an M1.
Yeah,
that didn't actually happen. Right? It's all just magic, and magic is the same. World War One wizards are exactly the same as like, you know, Baroque wizards. That sounds real stupid.
Yeah,
and
not a fan of that decision. That seems fucked up to me. It's unnecessary. Dracula is a perfectly good enough villain to hang this thing on. You don't need to make it weirdly personal to the Belmonts by having Dracula be one of them, and it's a big family revenge thing, you know? It seems perfectly enough to me that this is the family that fights Dracula, and that's what they do.
But like, there is this question of like why are the Belmonts so tied to this curse? And I mean, I guess that would be a way to do it.
It's justifiable. It's not like it's not completely random. You know, it ties into stuff reasonably well. I guess it doesn't seem necessary.
It does. It's Castlevania is sort of a textbook example of just like irrelevant bad lore.
It seems it seems really scattershot and right. Like
just the existence of a guy who's Dracula's son whose name is Dracula backwards, right? Like, it's like, okay, this is how hard they were trying when they established like the founding tropes of this stuff. Like, oh, hi, I'm Simon, I'm a vampire hunter. Oh, I'm hunting a vampire in this castle. Also, it's called Castlevania.
Do you know that they're making a Castlevania movie?
No.
Yeah, they're making a Castlevania movie.
But there Vania isn't even a thing. Vania is not a lexical unit, right? It is not Transylvania. It is Transylvania, meaning like between two forests or across two forests.
Sure.
Right? Like, you can't just... Yeah.
but Castlevania, it's still in there. It's just between two. It's the crow's noise between two forests.
If Castlevania.
Okay.
If Cass is an ancient word for stone, then Castlevania would be the stone forest.
Yeah. Mama Cass, Sylvania.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. You know, the gameplay is what Castlevania is about.
It's not great.
Story. Because also, like, oh, yeah, check it out. Is Medusa. She lives in my Romanian castle.
Yeah, her and all of her floating heads.
Yeah, and, you know, there's the mummy is here, and also Frankenstein.
and also Frankenstein.
Eagles that drop midgets. Like
the flea man.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. And the Yeti and the Mothman and Death.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Death is the
And Death is like a sub boss.
He's always hanging out there all the time. Sometimes he's like the first guy you fight.
Yeah. That's horse poopy.
You find that holy symbol that's a snorkel.
Castles that rise up and fall down into the ground a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You get that every 100 years the castle comes back.
Right.
In a different place. Sometimes it's in World War One. Yeah. sometimes, in order of Ecclesia, you don't go to Castlevania at all. And everybody's like, fuck this. And then you have a weapon on each hand. Somebody needs to just start a new series of games that is like, this is the good parts of Castlevania, gameplay-wise.
Yeah. A good Metroidvania-style like, game for the DS.
Well, see, that's the problem. It's like, Metroid doesn't have Syl as the last syllable. So that is
yeah, but that's problem. Metro Android. It's like a robot exploring a subway.
Okay,
that is actually what that is actually what that is.
A robot exploring a subway.
A robot in a subway. It was like an android, except an android that goes into the metro. Like,
wow.
Hand to heart, that is the origin of that name.
Wow, really?
And yeah, and so
a robot in the subway.
Yeah,
neither of which is a real thing in that game.
Well, who? I mean, you know, I don't think the guy that put in the little Easter egg where you turn into a girl if you beat it in a certain amount of time was thinking that he was establishing a canon that people were really going to give a lot of shits about later, and that there were going to be like a lot of critical, like, oh man, Other M really ruins the character that was established over the course of this one time when we drew a picture of a girl in pixels.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, but this to some extent, this speaks to how vital it is for the player to be actively engaged in the story, right? Because you have a single little moment like that, and then all of a sudden the viewer, the person who's partaking in this experience, fills in all kinds of interest and detail that wasn't there before, right? Like that's exciting. That's what makes things enduring, is the fact that you feel engaged.
But like when you start to criticize a story that is a result of a mistranslation of a randomly selected idea from the 80s.
Sure.
You know, like it's like, well, sure. what are we really?
Is it randomly selected, or is it playing on every time a motorcycle drove up and somebody took off the helmet, it was actually a girl inside? Like, you know what I mean? Like that was like a pretty common trope, I feel like, in the 80s.
Or like a welding mask, and then it was like, oh, that's hot.
Yeah.
I'd let her weld me.
Sure.
I mean, like, burn my genitals off with a torch.
Right.
Is that
where the term geld comes from? It's like a...
Yeah, they turn your dick into molten gold.
Yeah, that's when they turn you into gold,
Alright.
So that Alchemy. Sucks. Sorry that's disappointing, Riff.
You've been playing anything else, Riff?
Yeah, actually, I've been playing the hell out of Etrian Odyssey 4, which is... pretty great. I mean, if you want a good classic style JRPG sort of game, it is really, really good. It's got a lot of really interesting stuff in the skill trees, and everything is just really nicely balanced.
Is it written in Linear A or Linear B?
I don't really
know
what that
means. I'm thinking of Etruscan Odyssey.
Oh, okay.
I think I probably made that joke before, and it probably was also just as...
I don't think I got it the first time either.
Etruscan is a language that, as far as I know, we still have never translated. We've got like two different like versions of it, and it's like we've got examples of it, and we just don't know what it means. It's like it's back like, you know, when we didn't know what Egyptian hieroglyphs meant, which is
right, because we didn't have we hadn't found the Rosetta Stone, which is like such a weird coincidence that it kind of makes you feel like somebody was just fucking with us.
what, that somebody would translate something into three different languages and post it somewhere?
Well, it's so, like, the Rosetta Stone is just seems like such a deus ex machina, you know? They're like, why does that exist, and why does it look like a cool thing from a video game? You know, like, it's...
Sure.
I mean, yeah. You know, the answer is that cool things from video games look like that because that's what real things in the world that are cool look like. That.
That's the thing about movies that has kind of... was eye-opening to me, was seeing movies and seeing sort of tropes in movies and being like, wow, that is actually a, like... that's actually relatively true to how that would be in the world, because, you know, and because I happen to have, you know, experienced something like that. I wonder if that's where all like movies all are sort of like based on real things and feelings that people have, And sure, they might get like sort of amplified or whatever, but like they're all from something.
Well, no, it's like when you go to Alcatraz and you're like, this is where the idea for Dire Maul came from. Because look at that. It's fucking Dire Maul right in front of us. And then when you go on Splash Mountain and you're like, hey, this is Razor Fen Crawl.
Yeah.
And when you go to that one part of Africa where everybody just calls you a faggot, you're like, oh, this is where the Barons came from. And then there's a guy, there's just like all of these people screaming about Chuck Norris. Right. And you can hear them from 100 miles away. Yep. Boy, the Barons.
Some old school.
Yeah, that was a deep cut. I've learned that the router, I don't know that I'm going to be able to join the Video Games Hot Dog crew for this raid that I was really excited about and everybody else is really excited about in the Video Games Hot Dog forums, because every time I try to patch WoW onto this new machine, it'll run for a little while and then it just breaks the wireless router.
You tried to upload some files to Dropbox and it told you it was going to take you 10 days to get that upload. 9 or
10 days. And it was like... Yeah.
I haven't looked at the forum in a couple of days. What's this that you're talking about?
You don't get to play because you're an Alliance pussy.
It is
Nightfall putting together a cross server group to just do a bunch of old raid content.
Yeah. Ah, cool.
Starting with like Molten Core and doing some other exciting like legacy raids.
Yeah, I'm gonna try real hard to get this working, even if I have to like connect to some other wireless.
Just go to a friend's house for a little bit and
I'm not gonna carry this desktop machine.
Oh right, there. You're not laptoped.
I could maybe hook up my old hard drive and copy all those files over so that the patch process would be faster, because I already have all of it there instead of just having to actually download like, you know, the 28 or 35 gigs or whatever that World of Warcraft is now.
Right.
There's a lot of World of Warcraft on that hard drive. So you're enjoying Etrian Odyssey? It's just like you're mapping things?
Yeah, mapping things and killing monsters.
How many levels are there? Like, how many different maps? Because I feel like the Etrian Odyssey I played, there were only like 10 floors.
It's they spread it out pretty nice. Instead of having like a single dungeon with a bunch of floors, what it is now is there's, I think, probably 4 overlands. And then each overland has a main dungeon, which I'm about halfway through. So the first two have had 3 floors each. And then there's also 4 one-level caves that are just somewhere else on the overworld map.
Do you have to spend, like, hundreds of hours killing the dudes on level 1 to be tough enough to survive level 2?
Nope, I have done no grinding at all.
Huh.
I've been...
That's kinda nice.
I mean, I've been doing every single side quest that comes along and spending time making sure that my maps of these caves are complete, so that the time I've been spending doing that may account for the fact that I haven't had to grind any. But yeah, it's been really nicely balanced, such that making sure that I've been doing everything, I've been going to like the next deeper level of the dungeon, and stuff there is difficult enough to be satisfying, but not hard enough that it makes me want to go grind. And it's been like that every new level. It's kind of amazing how well it's been crafted in that regard.
Do you still get to make a lot of decisions about like what classes of character you bring in and stuff?
Yep.
Is it all just crazy open ended the way the one I played was?
Yeah, it is. You start out, you can make as many characters as you want, but you can only have 5 people in your party, and you start out with 7 character classes. So that's a pretty hefty decision right at the start. There is you have to pick out which 2 of these character classes you're not going to use, basically.
No, you pick which 6 you're not going to use, because 5 alchemists.
And it does actually, there's a really nice thing that happens. The last level of the dungeon in the second land you go through with an NPC character who fills in the usually empty sixth slot in your party. And she is a character class that you don't have access to yet. But once you beat that boss, that character class unlocks. And instead of just, you know, if you want to play this class, I feel like in a lot of the, in a more old school game of this style, you would just have to make a first level character of that class and level them up to match your guys. But instead, what they do is the NPC joins your guild. So if you want, you can just have her as a playable character now. Or if you would rather have a character that's entirely your own and maybe make some different skill decisions in that class, she also gives you two single-use items that can be used to level a character that is less than level 25 all the way to level 25.
And you're expected to be level 25 at that point? Is that the idea?
Yeah, I was level 30 when I beat that boss. But yeah, you'd probably be level 25 or a little higher. And so, yeah. So
but it avoids the whole starting a new character.
Exactly, yeah. It's.
But I mean, you could also use it if you were like, oh, I want a sixth alchemist. You could use it to just level an alchemist up to level 25.
Yeah, I think you could. Thematically, the book is tied to the race of people that this woman belongs to. I don't think it explicitly said that it only works for this particular character class, but I didn't test that because I've only got two of these things.
Can you not save and restore?
Oh yeah, I guess you could.
Well, Etrian Odyssey 4.
Yeah.
What else?
It is good stuff. That's pretty much it. Yep.
What about you, Kevin?
So the game I've spent the most time messing with the past week is called Bombermine, which is basically a massively multiplayer version of Bomberman, and it is kind of awesome. It's about 300 people at a time, in sort of a giant Bomberman map, and they're games last about 20 minutes, and everybody starts off like relatively isolated in this mostly sort of filled in Bomberman space, and you have to bomb your way sort of out of these tiny little areas, but you're collecting power-ups the whole way. And then it's, you know, you're getting points by blowing, you know, killing other players and collecting like, you know, gold and silver bars and stuff like that from the environment. And it's just like, if you like Bomberman, it is freaking great. And so that's been sort of something I've been filling in my spare time with.
Can you give me a primer on how Bomberman works?
So it is a tile, like a sort of just a grid-based map, top-down view. You start off with the ability to place one bomb. And that bomb, when you place it, it will show up either directly on the square that you're in or in front of you if you're up against like a square that you can't walk across. And it is very easy to accidentally place a bomb and then walk past it into a place where you can't get away from it. So it's very easy to kill yourself if you're not sort of paying attention. That bomb, when it blows up, will blow up in the four sort of cardinal directions. And it will go, I think, it starts off as just one square in each direction. You can get power-ups to let you place additional bombs at a time. So, you know, you can place two bombs, three bombs at a time, and that goes up to 20. So you can place up to 20 bombs. You can have 20 bombs at the screen at the time, which is actually really dangerous because if you're placing that many bombs...
Can you not walk through a bomb?
You cannot.
Okay.
You can, when you place the bomb, it is in the same square as you most of the time. And so while you're there, you can choose which direction to go. But once you've walked past it, you can't walk through it again. You can get a power up, which lets you kick bombs. But if there's two in a row, you can't move them. What else? You can also get power ups, which increase the range of the bombs. And that goes up to like a power of 8. So I think it can be like 8 squares in any direction. Bombs that their explosion in sort of hits another bomb will cause that bomb to explode, which is why placing 20 bombs like in a line, by the time you place that last bomb, you're probably already going to be dead. So you have to be careful about that. There are a bunch of other kinds of power-ups that you can get too. There's sort of one of the uber power-ups that's like really hard to get is just a shield that protects you from dying in a situation.
What does it mean for a power-up to be hard to get?
So there are like treasure chests that are placed in the middle of blocks that take like 8 or 10 hits to blow up in like the middle of a grid of these. Like, so they're really well fortified, basically. And you blow up one of those chests and inside of it is a shield. You also get a bunch of power-ups if you get a soccer ball to go into a soccer net, which is actually really, really hard to do. It would be really easy to do if you were cooperating with a second player, but since nobody is ever working together in the game, it's really actually very hard. There are power-ups that let you have like radio controlled bombs. So instead of blowing up on their own after 8 or 10 seconds, which is what bombs normally do, they'll just sit there until you hit a key, which blows them up, or another bomb blows them up. What else? There's like a special kind of bomb that goes 9 squares in each direction instead of the normal 8 maximum. They're not really power-ups. There's sort of weird effects that you can get that are like, turn me into Kenny from South Park, or turn me into Nyan Cat, where I shit out rainbow-colored bombs, or whatever. One of the effects of that is to make you into a little tiny version of yourself, which is the only way to get into another situation where there's another chest in the middle of a square, where there's just like tiny little holes that you can go through, but the only way to get through those is as a small version of yourself.
What makes a game last 20 minutes? Is there a timer?
As the timer gets close to zero, little Pac-Man figures come out and start devouring the world.
Like the Langoliers show up. Okay.
And then once it resets, then it sort of shows a leaderboard and you can start on the next sort of respawn of the world.
Are they making any money?
I have no idea.
And were you ever entreated to give them any money?
Not to my knowledge. There is a chat over on the right hand side, and the only ever like system message thing that I saw was them looking for moderators for the chat. I don't know how long this game has been around. It's bombermine.com. I think it might be HTML5. I'm not really sure what technology is running in. It's like a full screen browser game, nothing to download. They've got some servers in the US, servers in Europe, servers in Asia, maybe. I thought it was a ton of fun.
I played it and I had the same sort of just confusion that I always get when I play Bomb. Sure. Like, I don't really understand what's going on, and the parts of it that I do understand, I don't understand why they're supposed to be fun.
There's another power-up, which is
particularly multiplayer.
Speed power-up, moving faster, because your movement rate at the beginning is pretty abysmally slow.
I mean, playing Bomberman always felt to me like, okay, well, there's a thing that I want, and so I need to walk up here, drop a bomb, move out of the way, wait a really long time for it to blow up, walk back up there, drop another bomb, run back, move out of the way. And every time I got, like, I lost a guy or whatever, it was like, oh, well, it's just because I wasn't going slow enough. Like, I wasn't being careful.
You do need to be pretty careful, but it's made more strategic by the addition of a ton of additional players, right? Like, there's a bunch of other stuff going on because other people are constantly screwing around in the world around you, and you need to be really wary of them. You know, they're not necessarily always just trying to kill you, but they're not friends.
So it's like the real world,
I guess.
People like you meet on the subway, they're not necessarily trying to kill you, but
sure.
It's like defensive driving. You always got to assume that they are.
on your recommendation, I also played a game called Obliterate Everything 2.
I played the shit out of that.
Wait a minute. Yeah. How can there be a sequel to a game called Obliterate Everything?
It's in a different quantum reality where things escaped obliteration the first time around.
It is a... What would you call it?
It's like an RTS. It's an RTS with autonomous units. You build bases that produce units on a timer, and then the units operate themselves.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of games like this just in a very limited, like, one-dimensional axis where it's just, like, units marching from left and right sides of screens.
No, I didn't really think of this as being like those, but yeah, that sort of category of game where you have a castle on the left and they have a castle on the right, and you're just using resources to generate units that march and fight.
Right. This is sort of like
Pot a Pony.
But this is a 2D version
like that,
where you're in...
Edward Gorey sort of themed game. Do you remember that
one? Yeah. Yeah. So this is like that, except for it's in 2D space, and... You also have the ability to generate more resources that you can use. Like it's got a lot of stuff going on. The systems are actually pretty deep, and
I think it has a sort of a rock paper scissors with fighters, capital ships, and medium ships. But I never precisely understood what it was. I just kind of found a strategy that worked to beat almost every level.
Yeah,
and then beat almost every level using that strategy. You unlock new units by it, like when you start a game, it randomly generates a map, and it's like it's this kind of random generation of a starfield that you think is gonna work, but then it always it's looks exactly the same, because basically what you do, you put a bunch of stars on a grid, and then with each star you move it a little bit randomly on both the X and the Y axis, so it just gets to be kind of a weird crooked grid.
And but you connect one thing almost that it, every connection.
Yeah, one thing that it does not look like is space.
Right.
When you do it that way.
There are some neat sort of emergent strategies. I felt like the first dozen or so games of it that I played, I'd come up with a strategy, and then I'd try to use that strategy in the next game, and it just wouldn't work at all. And I kept having to come up with new ways, and I felt it was very sort of puzzly in that way.
Yeah.
And then Zach was like, "Oh, here's a strategy I found that kills almost everything," and that worked for a lot of stuff. And then there's like two or three other strategies that are also sort of overpowered in the way that they work. Physics labs and mining ships are pretty strong.
I don't think I ever unlocked the physics lab.
Yeah, that because like that just increases the rate of production of all the ships, so you don't have to build as many sort of ship generators.
I found that against those guys that infect you, I just read in the comments like, yeah, you just got to build a lot of fighters against those guys. So I would start out just like, instead of just building the carrier bases, you just build a whole bunch of fighter platforms, and then that basically holds it off.
Interesting.
And then you start building
the mining ships characters. Turn other ships into resources.
Yeah.
So that makes if you get enough of those out early enough, then you just never run out of resources at all. So that's like another sort of super strong strategy.
It was compelling. It was compelling. Like I wanted to see it through, and I probably played it for 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah, it's just a flash game, but. I think whoever made that, I think they've got some serious like systems ideas that should be paid some attention to. And then I played a couple other just iPhone games. Bad Piggies came up with some new levels that were really interesting. That game has continued to be very sort of just very well thought out and designed, and I really enjoy that. And then Lazors came out with some new puzzle levels. So I went through some of those. I guess I also played a couple more levels of that ridiculously bad 4-pixel, 1-word game.
You sent us some examples of
why do you torture yourself, Kevin?
I mean it's a puzzle game, so I want to be better than it, you know.
Yeah, but it's a puzzle game where you can't trust the puzzle designer. Right. I mean, this is a recurring theme is how puzzles only work if you can trust the person making them to make them fair and solvable. Right. And like these people have obviously demonstrated that they can't be trusted to do that. Also, weigh in on the Video Games Hot Dog forums or the Twitter if you've ever heard of a light switch described as a tumbler.
Switch. Tumblr switches are
it is a term, but I had to look it up. Like I was trying to rationalize their choices to you, just because I like arguing.
Sure.
You know? And you were like, this is ridiculous, this doesn't make any sense at all. And I say, well, yeah, sure, it'd be done. You know, you could see it from their point of view.
I mean, you can, once you know the answer, you can be like, I guess maybe, sort of, kinda. But that one, and
so for Tumblr, there was a gymnast hanging from some rings, which is not fucking tumbling. Right. there was some water pouring into a glass, which that glass is a tumbler. There was
the glass isn't even the point. Like, that's the thing, is the glass is not featured in that picture, right? Like, it's not even obvious that it's a tumbler glass.
There is a latte in the process of falling over.
I think it is a fucking cup of noodles. I don't think it is. Yeah,
I think it is a beverage in the process of being spilled.
I don't think so. I think it was a cup of noodles, with like it is a white styrofoam cup with a lid on it.
It doesn't have a lid. It's got foam falling out of it.
I think it
does. Okay. I would pull my phone out and check, but I'm using my phone to do a podcast with Riff.
Yep.
Remember Riff?
Yeah, I do remember
Riff. What?
Okay. No. That's it's. Oh.
Right? Like, that
no,
is...
No, that is... It. That is... Okay, that is a tub of non-dairy creamer with a foil...
Foil lid.
Lid on it.
But wow. With no labeling.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
Okay. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense at all.
Right.
Well, unless they're talking about how the girl in the wheelchair in Freddy Got Fingered plays that game where she flips the creamers and is describing that as tumbling.
Unless they also thought it was something that was falling over and tumbling... But yeah.
Well, you should stop.
And then stories was a picture of somebody selecting a floor to go on an elevator, which
sure.
Then a really sort of artsy shot of the corner of a typewriter.
Okay, you write stories on a typewriter.
Okay, sure. You might as well show a pencil. Like,
okay,
right?
Yeah.
A girl whispering to another girl, mm-hmm. and the second girl with her mouth open and being like, mm-hmm. and then a book with like a bunch of magic tendrils coming out of it. Yeah. Super awesome.
Just fucking stop playing it. Delete it. Delete it from your phone. I have finally gotten to the point where if I recognize that something is just a total waste of my time, I delight in just fuck you. Gone. Delete.
Yeah.
Because I got to keep everything down to one page.
Yeah, that's true. You've got that crazy restriction.
What else?
Did you? I sent you a picture of the Dracorex Hogwartsia, right?
Yeah. Yes. The the dinosaur that looks like a dragon and was named after Hogwarts.
Is that a real thing? I couldn't tell if that was real.
Like, I don't know.
Okay, I'm gonna look that up now.
That seems like the kind of thing that would be real. They're learning all sorts of things about dinosaurs. Like, did you know that they're fucking birds?
Dinosaurs fuck birds?
Yeah. They did back in the day. And that's how we ended up with the giraffe. That's how we ended up with Rudyard the Racist Kipling.
I mean, it's in Wikipedia, and we know Wikipedia is never wrong.
Yeah. I mean, Edgar Allan Poe is a homosexual.
Right.
You can tell by his fondness for creamy cock Doritos. Is that all? You've been playing your stupid four pictures, one cup, and getting angry at it?
Dragon King of Hogwarts is what Dracorex Hogwarts means. Mm. Great.
I've been playing a ton of the new SimCity. Well, not a ton.
That's cool looking.
I played several hours of it on various leagues. I'm not getting too involved. I'm not getting too attached to any of the stuff that's going on because I've experienced a fair number of just random rollbacks and just
in SimCity?
Yeah, as a result of weird server issues that they're having. Wow. It's not.
So your city does not exist on your computer, it exists on their servers.
It's just their server. And there's no saves. You can't like save your game and do something fucked up to the city to see what happens.
That is,
and then
I really like that.
Really?
Actually. Yeah, I would prefer it that way because
but
that,
what if
that
you,
makes it
like,
more.
What if
of a
you want to unleash Godzilla? Like, can't you? Can't
then you're gonna have to fucking clean up the Godzilla poop when this is all over.
Because, like, the whole idea of the original one was, like, build a cool city and then save it and then see what kinds of crazy destruction you can wreak.
Yeah, but I think that kind of violates the spirit of it, right? Because what you're supposed to do is unleash the destruction and then deal with it like a mayor solving real-world problems.
Well, you would deal with it by...
That's how you end up with your 10,000 hours of mayoral experience, and so then you eventually become Gavin Newsom.
Super mayor? Don't you just use, what is it, blackmail, or what were the typed codes for?
Porn tips, Gazzardo.
Black sheep wall.
I don't think it wasn't black sheep wall.
Well, black sheep wall is turning off fog of war in Warcraft 1.
Okay.
Are you sure that's not what you're thinking of?
No, I'm pretty sure, like, there was some way to get, like, a bunch of money in the original SimCity.
The original SimCity was fund, I think.
Just FUND?
Yeah.
Mm. But yeah, so I haven't been, like I said, I haven't been getting too attached, and I'm having a whole bunch of problems in the one city that I was sort of trying to generalize, owing entirely to the fact that because everything is simulated, like, if there is a crime, it is being committed by a criminal who is represented as a dude,
a single individual,
setting houses on fire or robbing banks or whatever in a car listening to rock and roll music. And if a police car cannot get to that criminal before he commits his crime, then crime goes up and people complain about crime and or buildings burn down because he's an arsonist or whatever. And so if you are extremely troubled by traffic, you also have every other problem that it is possible to have.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Fire trucks can't get where they're going. Ambulances can't get where they're going. Garbage trucks can't get where they're going. Freight trucks can't get where they're going. So, well, like...
That's realistic.
Your citizens never complain about traffic, but they do complain, where are the fucking cops? I can hear them all the time. I can hear them. All I ever hear the entire time you're playing this fucking game is just sirens, sirens, sirens. Why won't somebody come and get my trash? I can see a garbage truck in the distance that's empty. There's plenty of space at your dump. Why the fuck am I drowning in trash?
Is it possible you didn't make your streets wide enough?
They are the widest possible streets. I built the city, A, on rock and roll.
Yeah.
B, using the widest possible streets. I did an early, like, let's borrow all the money that we can to build the biggest streets, planning for the future. Because I was building a city of the future. I was not building, like, where are we going to live right now?
You built Brasilia.
Yeah, I planned it, man.
That worked out real well for them.
But everything is bad. Everything is bad because the traffic is bad, and I don't really know what to do about the traffic.
So is it possible that your blocks are too large?
I did it according to their guide, which is supposed to maximize the ability for buildings to, like, grow in density and size.
Okay.
Yeah. Although you sometimes end up with, like, there's, like, a guy who lives in a trailer that's right next to a giant skyscraper because there's not enough room for him to upgrade his trailer to a skyscraper. So he's just like, I guess I'll just hang out here.
It's like that church that they built the skyscraper over the top.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. It's like the plot of Up.
Right. Right.
Yeah. But you know, it is a charming motherfucking game.
It's pretty cool looking.
Yep.
I liked when it became night and the city, like, just was, like, beautifully lit.
Yep. No, really, it's real pretty. It's you start to, like, especially once the city gets extremely dense, the fact that everything is simulated, everything that is being simulated is represented, starts to get a little cumbersome because it's like, wow, fuck, there are a lot of cars here. And each of them is honking. And that's loud. And
you had a bunch of buildings catch on fire, which was really cool looking.
A lot of them, yeah. I'm pretty sure it was that arsonist.
Like windows would burst and, like, flames would shoot out of them. Like, it was just, like, really impressively simulated.
No, it's neat. They spent a lot of time on the details of this. And, you know, as a sort of veteran MMO enthusiast, it does not instill in me even an ounce of outrage when a game is periodically unplayable for a few minutes at a time during the first few days that the game exists.
Sure.
Right? And I mean, I think part of it is having been on the other side of that, like, sort of server infrastructure issue where it's like, well, you know, sorry, but the solution to this problem is to let it suck for a couple of days, and then later, when everybody is trying to play it an hour a week instead of 8 hours a day, everything will be fine.
Well, I mean, right? I can understand people being frustrated by having to deal with that for a single-player experience, though.
Well, but yeah, it isn't the single-player experience anymore.
I mean, the single-player experience becomes an aberration. When I was playing... So I made a single-player city that I'm having all these problems with. And then I made a city in a multiplayer region, and it was like, all right, this is how this is supposed to be played, because, like, you don't have any power. Well, this guy has extra power. You can just buy it from him. And it's like, instead of using my space and resources to, like, build a power plant, I can just buy electricity from this guy, and this guy has extra water, so you can buy that from him. And
until that guy decides to quit playing.
You built a hospital, and you've got some extra ambulances.
And his city goes to shit, and consequently, your city goes to shit.
Yeah, that can happen. If they explicitly abandon it. I think if they are not playing at the moment, then it's still... Okay. Their city just stays there.
In, like, a weird stasis.
I mean, the people who are... There's no reason to abandon a city unless you want to be playing, like, more than 16 cities at a time or something, which I think they expected...
Or you want to be a griefer.
Well, sure.
Interesting.
But, I mean, why do you... Why do you build me up, Buttercup?
You build a city that they're, like, your main goal is to take other people's trash, and you just built it around a giant pyramid of trash... Would that be a thing that you could do?
Well, I mean, if your goal was just to upset people, you would go and you would build a city in a public region,
yeah,
that focused on performing some service for your neighbors, right. started getting it to the point where everybody else is relying on you to do that, and then just stop doing it, I guess, right. If that is your idea of fun, which I'm sure it is for.
Can you then go look at their cities and watch them crumble?
Yeah, you can visit.
Okay.
Yeah. That was happening to me in my single player region, though. Like, I would sometimes get a visit from myself.
Whoa.
Okay. I don't know what that meant.
Huh. Maybe you were the arsonist. Did you have these periods where you didn't remember playing?
Yeah. Yeah. Nah, you're right. Other than that, I have not had enough experience with it to really make a lot of judgments about.
Didn't Emily have some complaints about?
She was mad.
Getting it to run.
She'll talk about it, though.
Okay.
She was upset that she bought it and was really excited about it, and then it just didn't work. And we were going to play together, and we couldn't because it wouldn't let her join my server because it said the server was too busy, but the server it was making her play on, which said it had plenty of capacity, wasn't working, and mine was at the same time. And so, you know, there were some... It is very frustrating in its lack of feedback. Like, at least in the first few days of Diablo 3, it was like, hey, error 37, you know, and you're like, oh, okay, this is an error code, meaning that the server is over capacity. That one of the primary ways in which SimCity's server infrastructure problems will manifest is it will make you do the tutorial again, but when you go into the tutorial, it's not giving you any instructions, and you can't actually act on anything.
That's rough.
So, like, this is how the server being down manifests itself, and that's a little fucked up.
Huh. Right. I wonder if the tutorial is stored locally, but it still keeps all the copy of everything on the server, so it, like, shunts you to your local game operations, but then... You can't actually operate on anything.
I don't have a real sense. Like, you know, they say in trying to justify the always online requirement, right, they're like, well, some of the pathfinding and stuff is handled on the server side. That doesn't seem to really make any sense, right?
No.
The idea that for every person who is playing this game, they have to have a computer that is more powerful than the person's computer who is playing the game,
right,
doesn't seem like a sustainable model for doing anything.
Yeah.
You know, I know that there are vagaries of pathfinding for which that is kind of true, right? Like the way that pathfinding works in World of Warcraft or in any MMO is that there is basically this massive grid of data that is...
It's like a lookup table. That is,
it's a lookup table for how to get from any point to any other point because it is too complicated a problem for the player's computer to solve in real time for however many mobs there are in the world that might be aggroed on you at the time. Right. So having to offload pathfinding to a server, it is not because it is doing it in an especially efficient, powerful way. It is because it is doing it in a weird way that your computer just doesn't have the data for. And that,
but the fact that you're generating a bunch of different kinds of environments seems like it's they can't have those lookup tables built.
So, I mean, I don't... The one problem... This is a problem with anything that comes out of a major studio, is that you can't count on anything they say to be true, right? Because they don't ever say anything to the public
that, it's not in their interest
that hasn't been approved by some PR guy. And it just means that you can't believe anything.
Can you not believe anything that a PR guy says?
I don't think so. I mean, you can't... It, once you get to the point where somebody's job is to communicate and they have a boss...
How do you know that they're really a PR guy?
Wow, I guess that you can't...
How do you know that they actually work for your company?
Huh. Well, they have an email address at EA.com.
Do they?
Wow, maybe they are just faking it. Like when we used to telnet into port 25 and send people emails from god@heaven.com telling them to stop jacking off.
Mill.
So the other things that I've been playing besides SimCity are these two iPhone games.
iPod.
One of which Josh got super into and told me that I should play, and I did, and it's fucking great. It is called Song Pop, and it is. I don't precisely understand how this works. It seems like it's kind of, it can be asynchronous, but it isn't necessarily asynchronous. Start a game, and then there are these different rounds where it will just play a song, and you get four choices. It plays a bit of a song,
well, like a clip.
I don't know how long it goes, actually.
Yeah.
But because you get more points for answering it fast, and so the goal is to answer it as fast
as possible.
It's
not very long. It's like 5 or 10 seconds. It's a pretty short clip.
Yeah, but yeah, then your choices are either the names of bands, and you know the right answer is the band who is doing the song, or the titles of songs. So it's just about very, very quickly identifying songs based on these little snippets of them that are being played. And for songs that I know, I am very, very good at this game, and it is really, really satisfying to just...
And you know a lot of songs.
It is really satisfying to just kick the shit out of people.
Yeah.
But then you'll play against somebody, and they will pick, like, modern rap as the genre, and they'll be like, all right, I'm just fucked.
Is there, like, a potpourri genre that's just, like, totally random?
I don't know.
Songs?
I don't know. That's a good question.
That'd be rough.
I haven't played very many
blues.
You buy new genre sets to introduce into the games with, like, that you're playing.
Which is
it's a neat idea.
It's like buying additional colors for draw something.
Yeah. I don't know. I've only played like 4 or 5 games of this, but it's fun. It's like it's such a different thing than you usually do. Which just like very quickly identify this song based on hearing a little bit of it.
It's like a bar game kind
of. Yeah, it's like the kind of thing that would be on a Mega Touch machine.
Yeah.
If a Mega Touch machine could afford to license every song somehow, right?
That's a thing that I'm curious about, is how did they get
those hot babe and hunk pictures for Erotic Photo Hunt? Erotic Photo Hunt was the best.
Was it?
Yeah, it was great.
Was it like trying to figure out the differences between two photos, or was it like hidden objects?
No. It was just one of her nipples is missing.
Or
like she has a different number of...
That's not very erotic.
She has a different granularity of fishnet on or something. But then I also played this game. It's a mini clip game called either 8-Pool or 8-Ball Pool,
or just Pool.
Just Pool, yeah, but it says 8 in front of it, but it's an 8-ball, so I don't know. This is basically just multiplayer like you say, I want to play pool. And then you have a certain number of pool coins that it selects an opponent who is somebody else who's currently also saying that they want to play pool. You each bet the coins. And then you just play a game of 8-ball. And it is... So I went through a period in my life where I played a ton of pool. Like my buddy and I would go out 2 or 3 times a week and either go, like, you know, during the week we would go to a pool hall and rent a table and just practice, just play pool against one another for 3 or 4 hours. And then when we would go out to bars, we would always just, you know,
dominate.
Not necessarily, but we would not in the sense that we were, like, aggressively competitive about it, but
right.
We could hold our own, right?
Did you
actually
play for money?
Yeah, we would play for money a lot of the time. And we would play for money and win most of the time if it was just casually at a bar. Like, we more often we would play for a round of beers or whatever, right? Like,
I feel like that's a pretty...
It's friendly. It's friendlier because it's also, you know, like, it's kind of the same thing as, like, let's play for $10 or whatever, right. But it's just, it's $10 that, like, you probably would have spent anyway.
Right.
You know, and then it just becomes a lot friendlier thing. Whenever we would go to a for money pool tournament, we would always just get our asses kicked because there are guys that just do that.
Huh.
Like, there are guys who are much more serious about playing pool than we were that would go around and do it. So the neat thing about this game is that it distills a game of 8-ball down to
the strategic
the strategic elements of it, because the execution is taken care of for you. There isn't really any dexterity element to like how much power you put into your shot. It's not like there's the little thing moving back and forth and you hit it at the right time. You just pull it down like a pinball plunger, and that's how you determine it. You get you set up the line of where you want to shoot, and it projects lines of where the cue ball is going to go and then where the object ball is going to go. And the more oblique the angle is, the shorter the projection is, just to like sort of indicate that it's harder to get that right.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of the uncertainty out of the execution. Like, you're not going to like forget to chalk the cue and so, you know, slip off the cue ball and embarrass yourself, right? And then people will say, ah, come on, you can shoot again. And you say, nah, that's a scratch, whatever. Right. It's just you're fucking embarrassed. You're like, I should not have let that happen. Or you try to put too much English on it and fuck up and jump it off the table or whatever, right? Like, that is not going to happen in this. So it is just the, like, it really facilitates the, like, occasional just sublime games of pool that you will play with somebody where they will break, get 3 or 4 balls in on the break, run up to the 8-ball, miss on the 8-ball because there were too many of your balls in the way, and then you play and run the table and finish the and sink the 8-ball. And it was like, that was a fucking perfect game of pool, because it wasn't just somebody totally dominating and the other person didn't get a chance. We took turns, but we were both so good at pool that it only took one turn each for us to finish the game, which is what happens if you're both really on the ball when you're playing in real life. Right, it very rarely happens, but when it does, you're like, "Damn, I just more or less ran the table." And it's like, that's like, it's really satisfying when it works out that way. And when you just sort of see, like, all right, so where do I need to leave the cue after this so that I have a shot that I can make? Now where do I need to leave it after this one? Now where do I need to leave it after this one? This game really distills that.
Because I watched that's over your shoulders, you played a game, and it, like, even the missed shots seemed like real pool missed shots. Like, it was like, oh, that almost went in the pocket. Like, it just bounced out just.
Yeah, like, I was just barely off on going into the side, and so it just vibrated back and forth against the edges of the side pocket and then bounced out.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's, you know, that's not a difficult thing to simulate.
No.
Right, like, that's been pretty much nailed down by computer games for 20 years.
Like... It seemed really well articulated.
Yeah, it was like satisfying. It was a very satisfying implementation of it. Like, it was very true to life.
Yeah.
Like, what do you call that?
Verisimilitudinous.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun though. Like, I found this by doing that thing that you do every once in a while if you're just, like, bored and you have your phone in front of you, where, like, I'm just going to go see what the popular games are in the App Store right now. Oh, it's a pool game. I'll pay $1 for that. And then I was like, wow, this is actually really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that the best games always bubble to the top there, but they're usually pretty solid.
And you will occasionally find something that you would never have, like, sought out
right.
on your yeah. own. Like, it never would have occurred to me, oh, I would like to play a multiplayer 8-ball game on the iPhone. Right. But seeing it, it's like, oh, it's like discovered something that's actually really fun to play. It also, like, the immediacy of just playing it in real time with another person on the internet is, like, it just makes it so much more satisfying than playing against the computer, because you're like, you also get that, like, you are watching him line up the shot and you're thinking, oh, I see what he's thinking, but I don't think this is going to work. And then he comes to the conclusion that it's not going to work. So he tries to line up some different shot and like, do I risk the one that I'm not sure if the thing is going to go in? The power, you can buy power-ups and they are the ability to put more English on the ball, which you can already put enough on it that you can... basically, but like you can't do like real serious backspin like you can at a real pool table. That's just like, I'm gonna hit the object ball and then just rocket away from it the way that I came in. But you can get it to come back a little bit, and then more overall power, which you basically never need, right? Like that's just a thing that people think would be valuable, and like maybe it's a little better on the break. But then a longer projection line, which actually does help with the execution aspects of it. But, like, again, not in a way that you can't just be good enough at it to overcome, you know, which seems pretty fair.
Yeah. Do you get informed when the opponent is using cash options?
I don't know. Because I never saw it happen, so if you don't, then you don't, and if you do, it could have just not happened.
Riff, didn't you find an iOS game that you were really excited about? It was like a Master of Orion.
No, that was Wes.
Oh, it was Wes.
Yeah. Okay. I looked at it and I was like, you know, I don't really want to play a 4X game on my phone.
I am tempted by it. I don't know that I want to pay $8 for it yet.
There's a free version.
Oh, there is.
There's like a light version of it. I forget what it is called.
Something Orion?
Yeah. The galaxy is in Orion's belt. Must to prevent war. The galaxy is in Orion's belt. Well, all right. Is that what we've been playing?
I guess so.
All right. Hey, Kevin, what's in the news? Hold on, I need to hand you the news, Kevin.
The only thing that I saw in the news the past week that was really interesting to me from a video game point of view was this crazy Torment Tides of Numenera Kickstarter.
Yep. Made their $1 million in 6 hours.
Yeah. They had a pretty high threshold, and within 6 hours of launch had already rocketed past it, so... It was like $1.5 million with 30 days to go. So we'll see how that
gonna make it.
Rolls out. Yeah. You know, I'm definitely interested in a sequel to Planescape Torment, without even having
played. Yeah, you've never even played Planescape Torment. Like,
But I mean,
you just take everybody's word for it.
Well, yeah. And I'm eventually going to play Planescape Torment, and then I'll go play this game too.
Have we not done Torment as an assignment yet?
No, we haven't.
We have not.
Huh.
Nope.
One day we will.
But it seems like the internet is still willing to put its money where its mouth is. I wonder if they did a Psychonauts 2 Kickstarter, what kind of money they could raise. Because it's got a lot of cult appeal, if not mass appeal.
I think
and Planescape Torment didn't. Is that like also a relatively cult appeal versus mass appeal? Like, what's the?
I mean, I think it has
critical appeal,
right? The thing about a Psychonauts 2 is that I am guessing that the budget of Psychonauts was probably 50 times the budget of Planescape Torment.
Well, so when Marcus Persson was wanting to give him a couple million dollars to make it. Like, I think Tim Schafer said that the actual budget would be more like $20 million or something. And so I don't know that, like, nothing on Kickstarter has ever raised that much money.
Right.
If a game could raise $15 million, maybe, would they still be willing to maybe try it? But that would still be, you know, basically an order of magnitude more than anything else.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the thing is that, like, a small team of a handful of... because, like, basically $1 million will pay 7 or 8 grown-ups to work for a year, right? The kind of people with the kind of skills that you need to make a video game that actually works and has good content and has good art, $1 million is 7 or 8 dudes for a year. And the kind of things that are pulling these are that kind of game, right? They're the kind of game that 7 or 8 dudes could make in a year, right? Because they are tile-based 2D, like, old-school RPGs, or they're stuff that's, like, simple enough gameplay-wise that, you know, if it is in more modern engines, it's, like, in stuff that takes care of a lot of it for you, right? Because the tools are just better than they used to be. But just in terms of producing content, right, there's a limit to what... there is a limit to what creative people can do, no matter how creative they are, right? There's only so many hours in the day, and there's only so much juice in a dude. And, like, it just takes a lot more dudes to make something like a Psychonauts than something like a Baldur's Gate, right? Like, because one writer can produce a tremendous amount of content for a Baldur's Gate by just writing stuff and arranging tiles into different kinds of dungeons and putting monsters in them, which, with Psychonauts, like... all the voicing, all the 3D stuff, all the level design, like, it is just an order of magnitude more complicated to make a free-roaming 3D game like that. Hey, maybe it wouldn't be anymore, you know, like, you do it in Unity. You probably couldn't do it in Unity.
You could probably, I mean, you could probably make something in Unity. I don't know if it would be...
first-person Psychonauts.
Yeah, if it'd be satisfying the same way.
With procedurally generated poetry about... a syphilitic traveling salesman.
So yeah, so that's the news item that I thought was interesting.
All right. Hey, so this assignment. Fuck, I forgot to mark the recording at the section break last time.
Life is hard.
I know, I'm just going to have to listen to it and figure out when we started talking about Kickstarter. Adventure for the Atari 2600.
Yep.
Yeah.
Man, there is some good stuff to say about this game.
Well, why don't you say something?
Why don't you? Yeah. Why don't you guys say something good about it while I go get another beer?
Okay. So
it was entertaining.
I mean, it was a game that I played for hours and hours and hours when I was a kid.
We're coming at this from absolute opposite ends of it because you're an adventure expert, and I have
I never played it. The first game that, like, the first level tutorial, I mean, I call it the tutorial, the first difficulty level, I beat in 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah. So, like, no, I just remembered where everything was because I had done that 100 times when I was a kid. Because
so you were
when
same,
I would get frustrated with the second difficulty, which was actually kind of hard, and had the bat sort of adding entropy to it.
Yeah. And like, I did not remember the layout of the, like, not fully revealed maze as well.
Yeah, the catacombs. I remember learning the word catacombs by having my dad describe that thing as the catacombs. I looked at a map, like a single GIF that was a walkthrough of it, that, like, this is the path through the catacombs, and it's real simple once you know it. And I like, looking at that made it a lot easier to play.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the path through the labyrinth is a little tricky, but I just remember as a kid, like actually mapping it out on a piece of paper and then being like, oh, this is actually connecting to the same screen on the other side, right? Like, the topology is weird. It's really, really weird.
I liked how the manual had to explain to you that going off the left... well, there's the jokey stuff, but then there's also in the manual, going to the left off of this screen moves you into a new area that you then enter from the right, because when this came out, that had never been done before. You would never... like, the sort of basic moving from one screen to another, this was where that came from. like the idea of a playfield spanning multiple screens was introduced with this game.
God, that is
that's crazy.
That is so hard to wrap my head around.
And it was, because it was never confusing. Like when we were kids playing this, it was so clear. Like, oh, I'm just moving around a world. Of course, that's how that works. But the fact that like that is an idea that somebody had,
right,
is
the fact that this is a translation of a text adventure.
Yeah, it is really.
That was definitely the genesis of it. Like that's what he wanted to make adventure the
right
adventure game.
No, I know, but I mean, I just kind of feel like it.
It didn't.
It
I don't
is
know that
exactly
lives up
the
it.
Same as if he was trying to do something that had nothing to do with that sure. because it just wasn't like.
But I mean, it's got some verbs. I mean, it's you know, you pick things up, you drop them. You
the only verb is drop. Something.
Well, no, but you also stab things. I mean, like by virtue, you put the bridge somewhere and you cross over walls. Like there are right. things
the bridge,
that you're doing.
The bridge really surprised me because I mean, I read through the manual and was like, okay, here's the objects you can get. And when it was talking about the bridge, I was imagining something like the ladder from Zelda. And when I first encountered the bridge in the game, I didn't recognize it as being the bridge because it's so large. I assumed it was scenery.
Oh, okay.
And then when I accidentally ran into it and it started moving along with me, I was like, oh, this is that fucking bridge they were talking about. Jesus. How am I moving this? It's giant.
Did you not have an Atari growing up, Riff?
No, I had a friend that had one, but he didn't have Adventure.
Hmm. The way that the objects in the game are designed is like just it creates just the right amount of emergent stuff by changing the rules of things.
Like the magnet
letting you pick up things that aren't in the same physical space as you, the bridge letting you move across some physical barriers.
Yeah,
that. Just that is like creates so much wider of a possibility space than simpler things would create.
And I wonder, like, having those abilities, like, does that make you less likely to assume that, like, you can just traverse from point A to point B these mazes and catacombs, right? Like if because they allow you to cross over walls, maybe like you might think, oh, maybe this doesn't actually have a straight path.
Right. I mean,
through.
Maybe there's a key in a room that you can't get to, and you have to use the magnet to get the key.
Right.
And there's not, but there suddenly is the possibility that there would be.
Right.
And the fucking bat, as frustrating as it is what like the bat is what makes it a game, right? Because killing the dragon is not like.
It's hard if you don't have the sword.
It's, sure. Well, it's impossible if you don't have the sword. Well, right. Like, but it's... Okay, it was a joke. I get jokes. But it's not, like, a crazy challenging thing. If you have the sword and you see the dragon, it is kind of weird that you can hold the sword by either end. Like, you sort of think that you need to be to the left of the dragon to kill it, but you don't really. You know what I thought was the most exciting discovery that I made at this point was that the dragons, the red, yellow, and green dragons, were named Rindle, Yorgel, and Grundle.
Yeah.
Which is good to know that one of the dragons is named after a taint.
Yep.
That's pretty good.
I liked the first time I started on difficulty 3, there was a dragon in the same room, and it immediately ate me. I was like... I don't remember that being a thing. And then I was like, oh, yeah, right. It just randomizes everything. So
I think the manual explaining how if there are ever more than 4 things on the screen at once, crazy magic shit happens that probably means you won't be able to pick anything up or anything. So be careful. Okay.
That reading Chasing the Beam and talking about how it's like, all the tricks that you have to employ to get the Atari to do... what
anything.
You want. Yeah. Like it only has registers for what, like 2 or 3 objects. I think the player might be a bullet or something. Like there are some weird shit.
Yeah, because it's like tank, bullet, and playfield, or paddle, bullet, and playfield,
yeah,
or something.
Are
like.
are the only object, and you can have like 2 paddles, a bullet, and then the playfield is a weird design space that has a couple of strange rules to it. And so, the objects became paddles that were just weirdly arranged. And then you were controlling the bullet by, and then like the ducks, I don't even know how they did the ducks and the bats. Ducks.
I didn't exactly understand what was trying to be represented with the dragons. Because, like, on the box art, it's like an Asian-style dragon that's just like a snake with legs.
Yeah.
And is the dragon in a coil, or does it have a big pot belly?
Because you get consumed and sort of jailed in that little, in that stomach thing, I assumed that it was...
You were inside, that you were in the dragon's
and you're
stomach.
Seeing like
a, as opposed to like, he bit you and then tangled you up in him. That hole isn't there when the dragon is opening its mouth, which is weird.
That is weird.
Yeah.
I feel like there were situations where I was inside a dragon and still had, I could like get to a sword and kill the dragon from inside it, but you still can't get out.
Right.
Like I remember when I was a kid, like messing with this a lot, and I do not remember. I could have sworn a year ago, before having gone back and played it, that I had found the secret room, but I don't know if I'm just making that up, right? Because that is really hard to actually stumble on. And I think because this was also the first game that ever had an Easter egg, right? Mm-hmm. Like this game is pretty seminal in terms of a lot of things that we just take for granted in modern video game experiences.
I mean, I think they are such, like, moving off of one screen, moving on to another screen, like somebody else would have done that.
Yeah,
right? Like
it's sure. Not, but somebody had to do it first.
Yeah, and it's neat.
Yeah,
you know, that I would really like to see. Like a GDC talk by that guy about this game, like the like the classic game postmortems that they do are super interesting to me.
The other major constraint was just the size limitations that they had to build these games, because it's either 4K or 8K. I forget. It might be just 4K.
Yeah, I think so.
Of programming and memory, like it's crazy how we got all that to fit.
Everybody listening, if you're interested in video games and hearing about people doing difficult things, read Racing the Beam by Ian Bogost and Nick Monfort.
Yes. Okay. I think so.
Yeah. It's really good.
It's pretty short and it's very compelling.
If you can get it on Kindle, I mean, it's $1 and you can probably read it in a half an hour.
It's an attempt to be really scholarly about sort of the development of Atari 2600. Video games.
And there's a Neuromancer joke.
Yeah, there's a good Neuromancer joke.
Well, what'd you think, Riff? Coming to this fresh.
It was entertaining for a few minutes. I messed around with it and it was cool. I don't have a ton of stuff to say about it. I think we've gone over most of the points that I had in mind.
I played a ton of other just random Atari games.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like, because, I had a copy of Stella with every ROM, and so I just, like, started picking them at random, and, man, there's a lot of games that were really difficult to figure out what the fuck was going on.
Hmm.
You really needed a manual for a lot of those things.
They, you know, not only were they shipping games that just had a bunch of bugs, like... and just explaining them as features or whatever, or magic.
I don't think these things were bugs. I think they were just limitations of the hardware that they wanted to do something cool. And
you getting stuck in the walls and stuff like that was like, there was something that wasn't coded well.
Like if you dropped the bridge while you are in the middle of a wall, you're just stuck. Yeah.
Right. Like
having the weird things that responded to I always forget that there were those two difficulty switches.
Right.
On.
Yeah.
That is a much more confusing interface situation than the like going from one screen to another. And like that was just sort of glossed over because like that was understood at the time. Right. Like that's weird. Not having like a title screen, just like when you boot up the game, it's just one, you know, weird. Like the progression of games from we don't have enough space to have anything extraneous to now we have some like ability to add some.
You can put Redbook audio, real orchestral music.
Yeah, like being blown away by the sound quality of Wing Commander, because for the first time, I don't know if it's the first time, but like it was like suddenly we could have like amazing audio in a video game. It's weird how all of these different steps in the progression we just take for granted now. You don't even think about it. You get upset if something has shitty quality audio or shitty, you know, graphics.
I wouldn't say I get upset. I would say I make fun of it.
Okay.
I snort derisively about it on a podcast. It's the verb that I have available to me.
I feel like you don't snort very often.
What are we going to do? Well, I can't now that I had my septum removed. I can no longer snort. Our next assignment is a game that you pulled out of our list of things that we were going to maybe do as assignments someday. And Riff didn't text me back, so Riff doesn't get a say in what we're doing as our assignment this time.
I was napping.
So we're going to do Dark Castle, the old Macintosh game, which apparently Kevin was able to find a DOS version of it that works pretty readily.
I think so. I was able to get it to boot and mess around with it a little bit in Boxer.
I don't really know anything about this game or its place in history, but a lot of people seem to be familiar with it.
I definitely played it.
It was definitely one of the classic games back on the old shoebox Macs.
All right. Well, Kevin, if somebody wanted to send us a listener's mail for our listener's mail segment that we do every once in a while, how would they do that?
Well, they could tweet us at VGHotDog. They could email us, vghotdog@gmail.com, and they could check out our forums at videogameshotdog.com. There was one tweet that we got, I think, today or yesterday that I thought was pretty funny from Larry. He asked how come it is whenever you back a Kickstarter project, it's doomed to failure, and whenever I back a Kickstarter project, it's guaranteed to succeed by 1,000,000%.
I've backed a lot of successful Kickstarters.
Sure. Yeah, I don't exactly know where that came from, but I don't think I've ever...
The thing that the FTL inspired game, I don't think is going to get its measly $15,000 that kid wants.
I saw somebody posted to Reddit a thing about a video game that I went and I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. And I went to look at it and it had $190 pledged to it with like 20 days left. And I was like, huh. And it's just like supposed to be like a puzzle game by probably like a college kid.
I backed that Tyvek map of San Francisco that I then conveniently left in a fucking drawer in Phoenix.
No.
I know. Oh. I thought about emailing the guy. I need to do this. I thought of emailing the guy. I'm like, hey, I backed your Kickstarter and I just fucked around and I left the fucking map in Phoenix and I'm in San Francisco. Is there any way that you could maybe just send me a list of the things that were on the map and their address? Like, do you have a PDF of that? You'd be willing to. But that was successfully funded, and I got it. It was delivered. It was a real physical product that was mailed to me. I don't know. I backed FTL. That funded.
Yeah.
Almost all of the projects that I've backed, I've done so after they were already funded.
Okay.
If they are uncertain,
like that too.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I just opened up the Kickstarter app on my phone and I'm up to 50 projects backed.
Jesus, Riff.
I think I pay you too much, Riff. I think what I have learned is that you spend a bunch of money on nothing. Right? And so that's kind of the same as just not having that money in the first place. And maybe it could go to a different employee that has, like, you know, extra mouths to feed or something.
No.
Somebody that has three mouths.
But then am I going to do when creepy. The Kickstarter I backed for an extra mouth comes through?
Okay. Well, then you'll have a better bargaining position. You got to learn to negotiate, Riff.
I think you need to learn to negotiate with at least one of your mouths.
This is a fucking battlefield.
I mean,
guys,
I could make an argument that my extra mouths to feed are about 30 different webcomics artists.
Guys, I've had a ton of fun doing this episode of Video Games Hot Dog with you, but I'm actually fading pretty fast. It's
Is it that, or does your city need you?
No. I think my bed needs me.
Wow.
After I finish this beer.
Crazy.
It could also be the beer. not really accustomed to processing that, but it's always a pleasure to serve with you, gentlemen.
Yes, indeed.
And we'll see you next week, kids.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
See ya. Yeah, I was just gonna say, because you're a nerd.